done it again.
Fulham needed a goal scorer. It seems like they found one.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under, and we are here today to discuss the Wolves game coming up this weekend, a chance for Fulham to jump into the top half. Here to talk it all through, we have, as always, Elton. How are we going, Elton?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm really good, looking forward to the weekend and just hoping this run continues and that it wasn't a dream.
It's been going well. Let's see if we can keep it going. And joining us for the first time, newest member of the That's So Craven team, we have Skibby, otherwise known as Putney Perspective on Twitter. How are we going, Skibby?
Hi. Yeah, really good. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, sort of off what Elton said, buzzing off the weekend, just hoping, well, I mean, the Fulham in me is always saying, where is the crash and burn? But let's always try and look ahead and see the positive side, I suppose. And looking at Adama's face right now, I'm already quite excited. I mean, what a cameo he puts in. So here we go. I'm buzzing to be here.
It is really exciting times at the moment. Some really good results over the last couple of weeks. And not fluking it as well, I think, is the main thing here. We're talking about really well-compiled wins and without some of our key players in the lineup as well. I think that is probably the most impressive thing for me. Marco's getting it done off the pitch, on the training ground, and we're getting it done on the pitch as well. We've seen turnarounds with some of the players, talking about Muniz, talking about seeing Adama coming back properly for the first time. It's really exciting times, and it's a big game this weekend against a Wolves side who are still sitting in the top half of the league. Not really sure how at the moment, but we'll crack into that in a bit. But what do we want to do first? Obviously, introduce yourself, Skibby, and maybe you can give us a bit of a background on yourself. For those following on the live stream, Skibby's not overly happy with me for putting together the little Pixar avatar of him, but why don't you just give us a bit of a background on your sort of Fulham history and go from there.
No, absolutely. So yeah, as you said, hate the avatar, but hey ho, it's too accurate. Maybe that's why I dislike it so much. It's like staring back at me it's like looking in a mirror. But anyway, so yeah, I've been a Fulham fan since I was about 7 years old. Dad used to take me, still does, but took me to my first game. I think we were in Division 2 and it was Cambridge United away in 97, I want to say. Just because it was a local to us, really. So just sort of a test out, see if I like it. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, followed the same suit of absolutely fell in love with it and have just been a Fulham fan ever since. So, I mean, he's always sort of called me a bit of a lucky or a good luck charm because I think from the Division 2 season, we got promoted that season and we've never looked back since. So I haven't had too much of the horrible history that my dad has had. So since then, been a season ticket holder in, well, originally the Hammersmith end. That was back in 2007, I believe, was my first year. And then before that was just sort of going to odd games and then we could fully commit. And then I had to give up my season ticket for a while, but I got my season ticket back this year. But unfortunately, as the name suggests, I had to go back to the Putney end as I couldn't get into the Hammersmith end. But it's not too bad. I mean, it's just a much, much different atmosphere than you're used to in the Hammersmith end. But hey, I'm close to the away fans, which isn't always nice. But hey, it's all great to see your team. But no, I've been a bumpy ride with Fulham. It's been some absolutely outstanding class players and some absolutely awful ones, but hey ho. And then not to mention the relegations, but it's been about 20 or coming up to nearly 30 years of just ups and downs, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Yeah, I was wondering, Skibby, with your dad being a Fulham fan, was there any chance you weren't going to be allowed to follow the Cottagers?
To be fair, he would be very understanding, I imagine. My mum is actually a Brighton fan, which makes last weekend even more awkward. But that was never really in the discussion. But I think it's just more fitting in a way that you go to school, you know, kids are supporting Man United. Where I grew up was very much North London, so very much geographically, my closest team was Tottenham. So could have been Tottenham, Arsenal, potentially West Ham, I suppose. But I don't know, there's just something about Fulham like to be different. I think that was the main thing. You know, people were talking about, you know, how Tottenham were getting on, how Arsenal were getting on. And it felt kind of special to be different, to say, well, I went to see Fulham at the weekend, play Stockport County and get a win, you know. I think, you know, some, and then you're talking about some players which people have never even heard of, you know. I loved Jeff Horsfield, loved all of those sort of era. And they were just, you go to school with a, well, go to football at school with a Jeff Horsfield shirt, I remember. And people were like, who the hell is that? But that was me. Allegiant, quirky, that's different.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm all for that. There's something joyous about supporting a club through the lower leagues. And, you know, when most people say you're a Fulham fan, everyone knows who Fulham are. But I remember early days saying you're a Fulham fan and most people go, what league do they even play in? Like, where are Fulham? It's very different now. But like you say, there's been good times. There's been some terrible times. And interesting, we started supporting roughly around the same time. And I was saying before, my first game was Carlisle, which I don't think we've actually played Carlisle since that game. I think I had a look the other day. So it's kind of crazy to think about the journey we've been on over the last, 25 years or however long it's been, which is just nuts to think about. There's been, Division 3 all the way up to European finals and this season, which has been probably one of the last season was very enjoyable. This season is pushing it as well as one of the most enjoyable of recent memories, where things are just clicking, things are going well. There's little quirky things like players like Muniz coming good, even when Jimenez is coming good as well. Willian's emergence as this, you know, graceful 36-year-old, however old he is, and Calvin Bassey, these guys like this. It's a great time to be a Fulham fan. And look, really excited to get you joined up with the team as well and be able to get you on the podcast a bit more often. And
yeah, absolutely.
Like you said before, just to be able to talk Fulham, which is just, it's what we love to do, and it's why we started the podcast. And it's great to have someone else on who loves talking Fulham. So let's talk Fulham. Let's talk about the Brighton game on the weekend. Obviously, we podcasted earlier this week about it, but it'd be great to get your thoughts, Skibby, on the game and how you saw this one and how enjoyable it is to get one over your mum as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Brighton are a mixed bag, and I think going into that game, I really couldn't choose how it would have gone. I know how good Fulham can be on their day. I know how Fulham can love to throw a result away. You know, we've witnessed it with Burnley earlier in the season. But I mean, even twice against Burnley. But Brighton are the same. They love to dictate the ball. They're very similar to the way that we play. It was very much how will the managers basically adapt their teams to counter each other. So, and I think that's what we saw. We saw a Marco Silva who was happy not to have as much of the ball as he would normally like. I think even if you guys have heard it, Tom Kenny was talking in the week and he said he hated the game because we were, you know, 70% possession against us. And it's not the way that Fulham play. It's not the way that he plays. But, you know, it's that lightning counter. So we're allowing Brighton to commit players forward. And therefore, I think we even saw it in the Traore goal, which was, you know, fighting in the middle of the pitch, catch him on the counter and away you go. And we saw that with Muniz for the first goal, fighting for a ball, which, to be honest, against Webster, and I think Estupiñan was next to him, he had no right winning that ball, but just the sheer tenacity and the grit and determination from the lad to get something on it. Doesn't have to be the prettiest touch, but, you know, just anything, a flick of the head, Wilson's in, and then it's 1-0. And it's, you could argue it was against the run of the play, but I think we contained Brighton. And I think for the rest of the game is what we saw, just the grit and determination from Fulham to get forward at the earliest opportunity, but also being able to be defensively sound, which potentially you don't really see much of Fulham in recent years, to say that we were defensively sound and we did keep Brighton at bay, who have very, very good players who can hurt teams. And we've seen that this season. So it was a fantastic result, a fantastic performance, but probably not the most typical Fulham performance that we've seen of recent times.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And I did hear Kenny say that. And it actually made me feel even better about the result because when you see players not enjoying it, but no matter what, they're getting the job done and they're sticking to the plan rather than saying, you know, this isn't the way I like to play. I'd rather pass the ball around and, you know, play in our way. But instead, we're actually adapting properly to play against an opponent like Brighton who, you know, I think they averaged the most passes per game in the league. They had 750 to our 300, so double the number of passes that we had in the game. But we let them do it. But I still think even though they had possession far more than we did, it felt like we controlled the game, which I think speaks volumes about it, the fact that we dominated this game, but we barely had the ball. It shows how well we played and how well we set up. Yeah, it's incredibly smart. A word on Muniz, you mentioned him a little bit before, but we spoke in our last podcast about it as well. Do you see him as potentially an answer going forward, or do you still think there's another player that has to come in? Would you be happy with Muniz next season?
It's an interesting one because we have seen it a lot. And I think I saw a stat which was Muniz has scored the most goals for an under 22 years old since Collins John. And he is the prime example, which I'm going to make the comparison is Collins John on his day was a fantastic player. I think he got 11 goals one season. And if you said, you know, a team that was around mid table, you would need that kind of 11 to 12 goal striker or a goal season striker. And Collins John showed that, but he just completely fell off. And I think last time I saw about Collins John, he got to about the age of 28. He was on trial at Crawley Town and the trial didn't go very well. And the caution in me is seeing Muniz do the same. And I think the reason being is because he's now at that stage of his career where there is that raw talent. Marco's obviously seen it. Our scouts have seen it and they believe in him. And it just shows that a bit of confidence, he can be that kind of tenacious, aggressive player that we need to bring others into play. But he's now at kind of that tipping point of his career where does he let, you know, I've got 5 goals in 5 games go to my head. I've made it slack off a little bit. Or does he now push on to become and solidify that place? I would love it. And the optimistic in me, it says that he will. And I think if he can potentially add, I don't know, I'm not even going to be overly greedy, but maybe if he can add 3 more goals, finish the season on 8 goals, and then pushes on for the next season as our starting number 9, I have faith in Marco to be able to bring that out of him. I'm just cautious that I've seen players in his similar position who think that they've made it because they've scored a couple of goals in a few games, you know, and he's getting the rewards. Don't get me wrong. He's getting the critics. I think Alan Shearer was talking about him saying what a great number 9 he's been. And that's going to go straight to your head, isn't it? As a number 9, and you're saying, wow, one of the greatest number 9s in the game is saying how great I am. Does that mean he pumps the brakes or does that mean he pushes on? I'd love him to push on. And part of me thinks that he's got that in him, that he can push on and become our number 9. But I'm going to throw a bit of caution in the wind that I wouldn't mind a striker to be there to basically compete with him. And I think, is Raul Jimenez that man to compete? Maybe someone a little bit younger and probably hungrier, but I think he could be, but I wouldn't say no to bringing in another striker.
Skibby, it's not the cautious in you, it's the Brit in you. This is your British English cricket supporter coming through. He's the Putney Pele.
I love the nickname as well. And I think, and there's everything about him is so likable, but I just see flashes of Collins John. That's all it is.
From my very, very rare sort of vague memory of Collins John, I think he's more energetic. He's more aggressive. And I think that is a confidence thing. But maybe that's part of his age as well. And, you know, and again, these are, I don't know the bloke, and I'm just being a very hopeful, super optimistic Fulham supporter, but he seems like a humble guy. And I know that can change. He seems pretty grounded, doesn't he? And you just sort of wonder with a couple of elder statesmen, you know, who he looks up to in the squad of guys like, what's his name, Willian, maybe to a lesser degree, Pereira, of his own kind. Maybe they keep his feet on the ground and just not let him get too far ahead of himself. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is quite right. And I think that sort of clique that you see in sort of the behind-the-scenes videos of Willian and Muniz and Pereira and somewhat Polina is probably good for him. Like you say, you've kind of got Pereira, who, let's be honest, may not be as mature as Willian, but he's been there, he's seen it, he's been at Man United and shown what, you know, hard work can get to, coming back into the Brazilian squad, for example, and he's said that he's owed that to Fulham. Potentially he's got the right people around him to be able to push on and sort of grow as a player, but I'm still going to be cautious.
I think it's fair to be cautious. And look, the Collins John thing's great because I love Collins John as well. I thought he was going to be like the next big thing. And you're right, he did sort of fade away. And I think in part it was down to Brian McBride was starting up alongside him and became the more favoured striker. And I think we played more for Brian McBride. And that's probably contributed to the drop off of Collins John back in the day.
We kind of went for two big strikers, didn't we? Was it McBride and Helgeson, was it? I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't quite fit the bill, but...
It's a shame, his story, because I just looked. He's still only 38, and he hasn't played football for 10 years now, which is just crazy for someone who was as talented as him. He's got a couple of Dutch caps to his name back in 2004. You know, he had a... And I agree, you have to be careful with players like this. I think maybe the times are a little bit different now as well, where, you know, 20-odd years ago, which is when Collins John debuted for Fulham, players did just drop out of the system completely and weren't taken care of properly. I feel like that might not happen now. And having that Brazilian connection, like you say, probably helps lift him up a little bit. And I just hope he succeeds just because he's such a nice kid. He's so likable, and the way he plays is so likable as well. The way he puts in so much energy and effort on the pitch, I just love it, and it brings goals. Like you saw with Wilson, like no one talks about the fact that that's his assist for the Wilson goal. Everyone talks about how it's a great finish from Wilson, and it is, but it doesn't happen without Muniz playing in that sort of style, beating a defender who's a couple of inches taller than him quite comfortably.
Beating two of them.
Just
two of them.
Hassling. And that's what I love.
And did the same for his goal as well. I mean, one of the best videos that Fulham put out there was the Muniz goal from every angle. And just watching his run of he peels off Webster and then dunks, looks and says, I've got you. You're in my eye line. And before you know, by the time Dunks looked at the flight of this ball, Muniz is gone. He's already gone past him, right? He made that run ahead of him. And it's just so intelligent. And there's parts of Muniz's play where you think he's just that kind of really raw, quite clumsy, similar to what you see or saw with Abubakar Kamara. Kind of, he'll get there. He's a bit clumsy, but, you know, he's putting the effort in. But then you see this glimpse of actual brilliance and you think, there is probably a better player there. And the touches. And you're thinking, there is a player here, you know. It's not the finished article, far from. But, you know, it could be something magical. And especially confidence. You could have the best player in the world. I mean, you look at Fernando Torres when he went to Chelsea. One of the best strikers I've ever seen in my life. But so, no confidence, you won't play. And you won't be able to perform. But, you know, you've got someone who potentially is nowhere near that level yet, dare I say, but the confidence he's on boosts him up to be that kind of player. And the reason people are now talking about, I've seen Man United fans, I've seen some other top six fans go, oh, that Muniz guy would be quite good to bring in as a backup for Hoyland or whatever. And I'm thinking, have you actually watched him play? But it just means that that confidence is bringing him into a level and a conversation, which is something that we would have all laughed at the start of the season, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Hey. I mean, we... Yeah, go on.
Sorry, Jack. I was just going to ask a question. Skippy, you know, I'm going to have a beer one night and it's going to end up at Skippy. You know that.
I know. And Skippy. To be honest, I'll allow it. your accent makes it better anyway. So,
hey, so what point, what's the criteria? What's the threshold? What does he have to do for him to be your number nine next year?
I think to finish the season with in the same tenacity and the way that he's playing in the last sort of five games, because part of me, I think the reason I'm so reserved is there's part of me which is he was our number three striker at the start of the season. Then, you know, Vinicius did some craziness that, you know, bumped him up to number two. And then under sort of Jimenez. And then I think Raul got injured. Vinicius went out on loan. Or did we sell him? I can't remember now. No, I think we sold him. Is he loan? But anyway, he left the club. And because Raul got injured and, you know, Broby wasn't quite ready yet, we kind of just had to throw him in and hope for the best. And I think there is an element of honeymoon period where it's kind of like, this is your chance. You can take it. And there's some elements which I think would be back down to the confidence where, you know, his Burnley goal, as great as it was probably not the cleanest strike. Lifted over the keeper got a hand to it. It was part of me was thinking maybe he could have done a little bit better there, but it's almost like that one goal just kind of kickstarted what he needed, that kind of confidence boost. And I think we're still in that kind of honeymoon phase, whereas we saw it with Pavel Pogrebniak. He came on loan, scored, I think it was one every two games. We think, well, great player. He went to Reading, didn't do much. Now, I think if he's able to finish the season and he's in a consistent way in the way that he's been playing and potentially even start the preseason in a similar fashion, then by all means, give him the number nine shirt and start him. I think if we do see him drop off towards the end of the season, maybe not playing into a certain standard, which he set himself this really high standard of Mitrovic 2.0, then potentially that's where we start to think, is it just, you know, that kind of honeymoon period where he managed to sort of push on a little bit. But I think if he's able to be consistent towards the end of the season and starts this preseason as Marco's number nine, I mean, out of all of us, we can only see what he does on the pitch. Marco's working with him every day. And if Marco says, here's the number nine shirt, you're starting next season, then I'm all for it. I think it's just that consistency and not just sort of focusing on the last sort of three or four games.
What's interesting, though, is it possible that he is actually a victim of his own phenomenal turnaround because no one believed in him? Like, it's not like a guy who came to the club and was fairly good and then really went on a goal-scoring spree. He couldn't get a start. He had a few opportunities, not many. I mean, he never started, to be fair to him. He came off the bench and couldn't do it, then went out on loan, came back. And
didn't play on loan.
No. I mean, but his turnaround has been so astonishing that I don't think anyone can quite trust themselves to believe that this is a permanent thing. Like, everyone's saying, if he can continue this, of course he's the man, right? Yeah. But we just don't know whether he can actually keep doing this. It's really interesting. I mean, I said last week, for me, if he does the same sort of job and maybe scores in two or three of the games out of Liverpool, Liverpool, Newcastle, Spurs and Man City, and actually looks the business against that sort of opposition, I don't think it's a flash in the pan. It's what it is. It's a quite remarkable coming of age in the shortest possible time under the most ridiculous amount of pressure that no one could have seen coming. And it's not surprising that no one can really allow themselves to believe it.
No, absolutely. And I think it's obviously that loan for Broja. I mean, he's come in and he's thought, you know what, I've been at Fulham for 2 years. I've been sort of knocking on the door. I've been on the bench. I mean, if that's what it takes to light the fire underneath him to become this great striker that we desperately need, then I'm sure we'll have a whip round and pay Chelsea that 5 million ourselves for the Broja loan. But no, I think you're quite right. And I think maybe it's more credit to Marco and his team to sort of light that fire underneath him to say, you've been sort of on the fringes, but you're just not quite seeing what we need from you and working with him. And he's worked hard to get to that point. I don't think there's an element of luck, to be honest. I mean, the positioning that we're starting to see from him, I think we saw some glimpses against Manchester United at home. He looked pretty good. Injured his knee, I think, of jumping, and that set him back a little bit. But there were sort of glimpses there. But I think you're quite right. We never really... He doesn't have the stats to back himself up. He doesn't really have the opportunities of... When he came off the bench, he was okay. He wasn't setting the world alight. And therefore, that's why we started to have a look. And we were looking for other sort of strikers to sort of say, well, we haven't plugged the Mitrovic void. But honestly, from what I've seen from him in the last sort of five games, he can be, but I'm going to be reserved about it, because ask me the same question. I'll tell you what, ask me the same question after Luton away and I'll give you a straight answer.
That's going to be much easier at the end of the season when he's got 15 goals under his belt by then, because he can't stop scoring. Well, yeah.
And then we
that's the crux of it though as well, isn't it? You know, I also think, you know, you have a look at the minutes he's played. He hasn't even played 9 full matches worth of 90 minutes yet. He's played, it's like 781 minutes for Fulham so far this season, which equates to 8.5 games. When he's started, which is the last 5 games, he's got 5 goals. He's had little cameos off the bench, so he might have played 15 games this season for Fulham, but he's only really had an opportunity to really make his mark in the last 5 or 6, and he has done. So I think it's interesting to see how he continues that form through the next 11 games of the season, if he can pick up another 4 or 5 goals in those games and almost push double figures, having barely started. You know, if he starts every game for the rest of the season, he'll have played 20 games worth of 90 minutes. And if he walks away with 10 goals in those 20 games, that's a seriously good return. And that to me is enough to say this kid has the ability to do it next season, and give him a chance and build around him as your key striker and bring in players who will complement him. And I think then you can actually build on that, and that would make sense for me. So I agree. I think he needs to score goals and just prove that against those big clubs, when he's not scoring goals, he's still making an impact in some way, shape or form. How that is, I'm not sure yet, but causing a hassle for you know, those top 6 defenses, and maybe putting 1 goal away against those Tottenham, Liverpool, Newcastle, City games. If he can score 1 goal in those games, I think we'd all be pretty happy and go, yeah, okay, he can do it against the shitter sides, he can do it against the good sides. That's what you want to see. Guys, let's move on and talk about the game coming this weekend. It's a big game against Wolves. Fulham have been sat in 12th position for, it feels like, forever. We can't seem to move up or down the table, but this is the chance to do so. Wolves currently sitting in 10th position. They are on 38 points at the moment this season. Same goal difference as us, so 3 points ahead of us. A win against Wolves will see us jump at least above them into 11th, potentially as high as 10th, depending on the Chelsea result. We beat them earlier this season, 3-2. Dad, I'll throw it to you first. How do you feel we'll do against this Wolves side, sort of looking at recent form for both sides?
Well, thinking firstly just about our own form, which is, I think, very much the way this unit works. They fear nobody, and I think when they're in good form, they're a handful. Obviously, I think we're better at home, record away hasn't been amazing this season, but I am pretty surprised when I think about it and reflect on the fact that Wolves are where they are, because they don't bother me as a really dangerous side. If I compare them to someone like Brighton, for example, I know they've got some good players, but they never really bother me. They've got some injuries, and so and their form hasn't been incredible. It's a bit inconsistent. What, 2 wins from the last 5, no draws. The thing about this Wolves team is they ship as many goals as Fulham do, and have scored about the same as well. So it's very difficult to imagine this is going to be a low scoring game. I can't see it. I think there's going to be goals aplenty.
Well, one thing worth saying, if you do look at the recent form, Wolves have scored 3 goals in their last 5 games, and one of those is against Sheffield United, another one in the cup against a weakened Brighton side, and one in a loss against Tottenham. They did lose to Brentford, lost to Newcastle as well. Just realizing on the live stream I didn't change the logos for all those clubs, but that's fine. The words are right. It is patchy form at the moment, and there were some injury concerns on the weekend. Obviously, Hwang Hee-chan is still out and unavailable. Pedro Neto came off with a hamstring complaint at halftime. Jose Sarr as well in goal came off with, I think, a thigh injury. Both precautionary. They might be available for this weekend, but they might be looking at the Fulham game and going, this isn't as important a game as some of the others coming up in the coming weeks, so maybe we rest them for a bit. They do have some injury concerns at the moment, so it is possible that we see some of those players get rested and we don't come up against a full-strength Wolves side. And on the flip side, Skibby, I'll throw it to you. Fulham, Raul Jimenez back in training at the moment. I think that means there are no injuries at all within the Fulham squad. Surely that's got to count in our favour for this game.
Oh, massively. I mean, I was sort of thinking about this before we started about, you know, we've never really had that run of, you know, a full squad to choose from. I think Adama's always been sort of out. You know, we lost Bassey and Iwobi to the AFCON. And then Jimenez picked up the injury. He just said he's back. It's always been that kind of, you know, we've always had a kind of a strong core, as it were. But, you know, then we went through the phase of Diop being out. We had to have 2 left-footed centre-backs. And it was just all a bit kind of like, there is something here. There's something special with this team. But we just needed that kind of luck and consistency to keep them all fit. And I think we're now starting to hit that kind of at a really crucial part of the season, not so much for a relegation point, but more of a dare we dream for picking up a Europa Conference League place. And I think this is a game, forms aside, that on paper, the current Fulham squad should be winning. And especially with the main names out that you mentioned, that, again, cautiously optimistic. That's going to be like my new catchphrase, I think. But why can't we go to Wolves and play like we play and get the 3 points out of this game? But Wolves are a tricky customer. We saw it in the home leg, which was the home game, which was very strange with 3 penalties, I remember. And it was one of those very classic Fulham performances of, you know, we seem to be comfortable, take an early lead, and then we seem to sit back a little bit and we let Wolves back in the game. I think it was Nunes with the header free at the back post. And that just kind of rattled us before half time. And then we kind of got rescued by a penalty. Was it a penalty? Was it not? So it's really hard to go off that game of what kind of game you're going to see this weekend. But then when you start to look at the form, Wolves, like you say, not the most exciting team. They've been sitting in a certain position for a long time now in the top half due to their sort of start of the first half of the campaign. Seem to have dropped off with the injuries that they're having. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that I saw a stat, which was that Fulham have never done the double over Wolves in the league after 44 years. So,
oh, don't say that. You know what that means.
Exactly. Fulhamish strikes again. But this is the 44th campaign where we could have the potential of doing the double, but we haven't done it yet. So this will be the first time ever.
Yeah. And look, Molyneux is not an easy place to go to get a result. And like you say, this is, it's a really hard to predict Wolves side, similarly to Brighton as well. You know, we see games against Brighton sometimes where you go there and you just get dominated, and we've had a few smash and grabs over the last couple of years with Brighton. I feel like with Wolves, it can be fairly similar where, you know, they kind of dominate the game and sort of break up the way that we like to play. And that means we do struggle to get a result against them. I'm hoping that it's a little calmer because of our recent form, because of some of the injuries. João Gomes might potentially miss this one. Mateus Cunha's out. Hwang Hee-chan, like I said before, potentially Neto out. These are, you know, serious talents for Wolves who have kind of carried their team for the season so far. And if we come up against the Wolves team without those key players, I'd say it does make the job a little easier for Fulham. The fact on top of that, that we have so many returning players and so many available players. I also look at the fact that when you see players coming off the bench now for Fulham, it's game changers coming off the bench.
Yeah.
I doubt Jimenez will start, not just because of the form of Muniz, but because he's returning from injury. But I'd expect he'll probably sit on the bench. The fact that you can bring in someone like that, who was on a pretty good goal-scoring run before injury. Adama Traore, I assume, will probably come off the bench. Potentially Deckard over Reed, Kearney, maybe Wilson if they decide to start with Iwobi and Willian, or Willian coming off the bench. Like, there's game changes there now, and the fact that we've got the ability to have this deep sort of squad that you can pull off the bench, it just makes me excited for this game, because there's so many possibilities now, and you don't feel like, oh, if we go 1-0 down, there's no coming back from that, and all we can do is get a draw. You feel like there's a little bit more there backing us up now, and so there's a real chance for us to actually go to Wolves and do the double over them for once, which I think would be huge for us. They've got they don't actually play again until after the international break, but after that they've probably got a bit of a focus on that. I'd say they're hoping that some of those injured players maybe miss this game and have the time to rest over the international break and come back fully fit. I think if you've got a key player who's got a bit of a hamstring injury or a hamstring complaint, you might not risk him going into the international break, because you don't want to lose him for the rest of the season. Like, they might have a couple of players out for the rest of the season at that point, and they don't have the easiest run in. They've got to still play Arsenal, City, Liverpool, Villa in the next couple of weeks. So there's something there that they might be keeping an eye on some of those games rather than this one. Dad, we kind of touched on it a little bit in the last podcast, but I'd like to go into a bit more depth about the sort of Polina conundrum, if you will, although I don't think it's much of a conundrum. Reed and Lukic been playing superbly together over the last couple of games. Is there any doubt that Polina comes back into the starting lineup?
Well, we did talk about this before, and it's difficult to know, but it kind of feels like you've got to play him. I mean, surely, you know, the boys have done a good job, and they've done a very admirable job, and it's fantastic that both Lukic, well, to a lesser degree, Harrison Reed, but Lukic has obviously picked up a lot of confidence, and he's impressed the last couple of weeks. So fantastic to have him on the bench if required. I personally would prefer to see Kearney play with Polina to kind of outsmart Lamina in the midfield and cut him out of the game, both chop him out and actually have the creativity to spread the ball wide and actually basically take him out of the game. I think it would be a fairly brave Marco to leave him out, honestly. and purely go on form and reward Harrison Reed and Lukic for the great 2 weeks that they've had, I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's first name on the team sheet.
Yeah. Skibby, your thoughts?
Call me crazy, but I'm sticking with Reed and Lukic just because...
I will call you crazy.
I mean, we've kind of really, dare I say, not missed... Maybe it's the type of game that we've had with Brighton and Man United, but you think those are the sort of games where you need that tough tackling midfielder to really sort of disrupt things. But we didn't really look out of place. And I guess there's a part of doubt in the back of my mind where Polina could well be off in the summer. So why not keep trying out Lukic and Reed? Maybe even Reed and Kearney, I wouldn't mind too much. And I think against a weakened Wolves team, I don't think there's much need to change. I know it won't happen, but there's part of me which will just think that we've played really well, haven't looked out of place in the midfield. Therefore, does Polina deserve to come straight back in? For me, no. Be very harsh on Lukic, because obviously I think it would be... I think it would probably be more Reed, wouldn't it? There's Reed would be dropped, yeah. But it would be Lukic and Polina if it was to change. But, I mean, there was a quote from Marco from the preseason, which was the best player at preseason was Lukic. So I think, could he just need that confidence boost run of games to potentially be that number eight that we are crying out for? But for me, Reed has been probably the more impressive of the two. So therefore, I'd probably keep Reed and Lukic.
Well, I think that is a wild card, because if we can give Lukic enough games to really get himself out of his head, for want of a better term, and play with freedom and play with confidence and really feel like he can do a job, and he's free of the shackles of having to do all the heavy lifting around, you know, defensive work, then we've got a real player there. And the other question, of course, is does he stay? And if Lukic actually has a great 5, 6, 7 games in the latter half of the season, maybe that's the difference between him staying and wanting to leave. So it's hard to know. And I mean, Marco would be very close to this, I'm sure. And that would no doubt be come into his thinking of, you know, is this an opportunity to actually turn a player?
But what a position to be in. Like, Polina at your disposal, to have Lukic, who's now picking up a bit of form, Reed, Kearney. I mean,
absolutely.
Four absolutely top-class Premier League centre-mids there. It's just a headache we're not used to. I think that's why it's hard for me to answer.
Yeah, and it's a good headache to have as well, for sure.
Like, absolutely.
As you say, we're talking about potentially not picking the bloke who's got the most interceptions and tackles in any league in Europe, any of the top leagues in Europe over the last 2 years, and saying, does he make it back into this Fulham team? Like, it should be a given that he comes back in. But the fact that Reed and Lukic have played so well together, it does make it a hard decision, or at least a harder decision. And I think we mentioned it on the last pod. The thing for me is I look at it and go, you know, Polina is likely off in the summer. We're not sure if that's a given or not, because, you know, he's a year older and maybe clubs aren't willing to spend the 80 million that we're sort of asking for, even the 50 million that we're asking for a player who's maybe a little bit past where you'd want to be physically. But do we actually look at that and go, you know, Polina out hasn't affected us that much? Maybe selling Polina in the summer and getting a premium for him at 50, 60 mil and being able to bring in a couple of players on top of that is better business for us all of a sudden, because we can play with Reed and Lukic and start to bring someone else into the team off the back of that. I look at someone like Luke Harris maybe getting more opportunities next season with Polina out of the team, because there's one less roadblock to get past. Maybe someone like Josh King is a young 16-year-old playing in the under-18s and doing bits at the moment. Maybe he's the kind of person who gets more opportunities by Polina leaving, and maybe all of a sudden we've got the Mitro and Polina money, 100 mil sitting there, that we can spend on strengthening other parts of the squad, like bringing in some additional defensive cover, bringing in some wingers to replace Willian, who, as much as I'd love him to go for another five seasons, he's getting to be an old man now, despite him being, I think, younger than me. But it's one of those things where you have to start considering the future, and it's made me feel a little bit better knowing that the future is not as dark and dull as I thought it was going to be, because I'm looking at next season going, geez, this is going to be horrible when Polina leaves, because we're going to be completely buggered. But now I look at it and go, well, Reid and Lukic have proved that they can do a job. And you bring in, you know, I'm not sure who it is. It might be someone like Andre or one of the other names that's been thrown out there. Florentino Luiz, I think, was another person considered. These guys could potentially come in and we can actually slowly bring them into the team rather than expecting someone to do it right from the start, because we have the ability to do that because we know that Lukic and Reid can do it. So it's all actually, there's a lot of positives there. There's a lot of work still to be done, but there are a lot of positives that have come out of the last couple of weeks, not just the results, but seeing how the squad is improving and building over time, and seeing how Marco's system obviously is just being burnt into these guys' brains, because everyone knows exactly how to play when they go out there, no matter who is playing around them. And that's key to getting good results for the long-term future for the club. Skibby, I'll push you for a bit of a prediction for this game, because I personally, it's really tough for me to understand which way this one's going to go. History says it's not going to be good, but form says it is going to be good. Tell us your thoughts. How do you see this one panning out?
So I think coming off the back of the Brighton game, as well as the win at Old Trafford, there's going to be high confidence. There's going to be a real game plan as well. So I have a lot of trust in the guys that they've been working hard to on this game and understand how they can come away with 3 points. So I'm going for a win. I think it won't be as easy as we think. However, I think it could be high scoring. So part of me thinking, I reckon a 3-1 win for Fulham. Just because there's a lot of, dare I say, the wounded wolf. I think that's the key point here, is that they haven't got the players that potentially they would like. However, I think that there's high confidence. Part of me is just thinking that Rodrigo is going to continue his goal scoring form. I think he's just going to keep going. I know he will, because we were all thinking it's going to come crashing down. He's just going to carry on. But I think with the numbers that we have, and I think the key point is more around the players like Iwobi, who can play in multiple positions, that, you know, if the game is not going our way in a certain way, that we can utilize him in that number 10. We can put him into the number 8 position. We can put him on the wing. I think we've got that versatility in other players, which will allow us to come out and win this game 3-1.
3-1.
Let's not forget that surely Adama, as gentle a soul as he appears to be, would love to score a goal at the Molineux.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. But does he start? Because if he starts,
I don't think he's Willian or Iwobi.
Him off the bench, dangerous, very dangerous.
Always, yeah. Absolutely.
Go on, Dad. Your prediction for the game.
Well, I said 2-0. I'm going to modify my prediction somewhat, and I'm going to give them a goal, but I'm not quite sure if it's going to be 2-1 Fulham or 3-1. I see goals. I think I reckon Muniz is going to score again. I fancy Adama Traore. I do. I fancy he's going to score.
It's very generous of you to give Wolves a goal. I'll give them a goal and let them score one. Give them some hope. I agree. I think it's going to be a 2-1 or a 3-1. I see us scoring a few here. I think Muniz is going to be a real handful for the Wolves' defence. I've really liked the way we press, and I know Wolves have a couple of players who like to play out of the back, and I feel like we could potentially cause them a few little issues. I think Yose Sarr as well is... I think he thinks he's very good with the ball at his feet, but not maybe as good as he thinks. And a bit of a press from Muniz. Iwobi likes to press hard as well. Pereira's been pressing hard in recent weeks. I think we could potentially cause him a few issues, and there might be a few little defensive slip-ups. We saw it with the number of penalties they gave away last time. We do cause their defence some issues, and I think with the form we're in at the moment as well, there's a real chance of us scoring a few goals here. And I'd kind of back the 3-1. I feel like they're probably going to score because they have players who can just make something happen at the drop of a hat, and there'll be a moment of magic from someone. I'm glad Ruben Neves isn't at Wolves anymore, because he always seemed to do stuff against us and just pull the strings. I'm glad we've seen the back of him. I think a Fulham win, 2 or 3-1. Place your bets on that. Both teams to score, Fulham to win, Muniz to score anytime. Easy money.
Printing
money. Money Muniz, printing money for Fulham fans everywhere. Let's talk about one final thing before we wrap up for the day. A couple of milestones are announced on Fulham's Twitter feed. Now, it's appearances for Fulham. I believe Wilson's is 100 career appearances for Fulham, and Kearney and BDR, I think they are 200 and 300 league appearances for Fulham. But it kind of opens up a bit of a conversation, because these are guys who we've seen at the club for a very long time now, and it made me sort of dive a little bit deeper into some of the squad stats to see, you know, how many games a lot of this Fulham starting lineup have actually played for Fulham. And when you look at the squad that we currently have going out on the pitch, look at obviously these three have over 100. You've got Tim Ream in and around the squad with 300 under his belt. A lot of players now sort of 50 plus. We're talking 60, 70 appearances for the majority of the starting lineup. But if you take out, you know, the new signings for this season in Bassey and Iwobi. But it opened up a bit of a conversation for me about the depth that we now have in the squad and the experience and how that affects us. I just wanted to have a bit of a chat about that and also celebrate these three players who contributed so much to Fulham, especially in the last three seasons. Skibby, how do you see our squad depth now? Because at the start of the season, it was something that I think we were all a little bit worried about, especially when results weren't really going our way. We were looking at it and going, Deckard over Reed isn't at the level we want. Harry Wilson's not showing what we want. Kearney's too old now. And these three guys have, you know, been a bit of a linchpin for the team over the last, well, over this season at least. Do you feel like the depth is there now, and we're not really at a stage where in summer we're hoping for 6 or 7 transfers anymore? We're just looking to make slight tweaks and improvements.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. With the talk of recruitment, I think there has to be some kind... I know it's a really kind of Marmite topic with Fulham fans, but in a way, looking at these three signings, you have to kind of commend our recruitment. So Harry Wilson on loan with the option to buy in the Championship, Bobby Deckard over Reed in the Championship. I mean, we bought these three players in the Championship, and they're now still playing and really still making an impact. Kearney, well, actually, yeah, all three of them still making a huge impact on the Premier League level, which I think is something which probably gets forgotten from a recruitment standpoint. But I think there also has to be that versatility that I mentioned earlier. Like Bobby Deckard over Reed, he's played right back, left back, centre mid. I think he's played striker. He's played anywhere anyone wants him. I think that's a commendment to getting to 200 appearances wherever we've had gaps. And like you say, we didn't necessarily have the squad depth at the time, that he stepped up and he's proven to be a real great asset to the team. And yeah, Wilson had that really bad injury. Cairney had a bad injury. I think they kind of knocked them to make us think that, you know, they, these guys cannot do it at a Premier League level. Wilson potentially had more, I would say, potential to perform at such a level. But for him to now sort of get back into the swing of things, get his confidence and his fitness back, he, we're now starting to see that player that, you know, could be our permanent right winger. And I think with Cairney as well, a lot of people forget that, you know, he had 12 months out with that knee injury, he had so many setbacks, and everyone's thinking, yeah, we can't, we don't need Cairney anymore. You know, he's just always injured or he's not good enough. And I think for them to come in, especially this season, and prove that they are good enough, and I think it really is a commend, a really good thing for our transfer sort of scouting team, and the way that we've done our transfers, that these actually show that in a way it is kind of working, that our recruitment strategy. But yeah, like you say, the squad depth that we have now with these three coming in and sort of playing like they're playing, I think it's the versatility is the key. Mm. And I think they all bring their own aspects in, especially Cairney for me. When you're trying to see out a game, there is no other centre mid that I would love to come into Fulham and come on off that bench and just slow the game down. Great sort of touches, slows it right down and brings in those sort of fouls, but also has the ability to unlock defences. He is an asset to us. And I think he is still proving that he is a top, top class centre mid. And I think with the depth that we have now, we don't necessarily need to start spending money like crazy. And I think one of those kind of signings that we talked about is Iwobi for me, a man who can play number 8, number 10 on the wing. He can play wing back, I think, if you wanted him to.
Yeah.
I think those kind of assets of coming in and being able to play wherever you want them, but see the game out almost, of being able to be a fantastic investment. And I think for that reason, we don't need to start spending big on players. We need to really just start looking at potentially younger, but more around the actual quality of what they bring to the team. We don't need to have those sort of like-for-like replacements, back to the Paulinho conversation. But I think younger and players which can sort of improve the team is something we'll be looking at. But for me, the versatility and the core squad that we have a decent squad depth for any kind of mid-table to pushing top half-table Premier League team.
When we were talking earlier today, Jack, and you showed me that slide, I did comment, it kind of reflects on the age of the squad as well. But on the flip side, not only have these guys played a lot of professional games, they've played a lot of games together, and there's something in that. And obviously, we've had a reasonable turnover of new people coming in the last couple of years, but we've got a lot of players in the Fulham squad who've actually been around each other for quite a while. And you know, for a mid-table team, as we always say, for a mid-table team that needs to be highly efficient, you need that kind of knowledge or sense of knowing in a squad, because we don't rely on spectacular individuals. We're a team. That's how we get results. Having said all of that, we've still been poor in the last couple of transfer windows. I know the last January transfer window was a weird one with FFP concerns, but if you look at the last 12, 18 months, whilst the purchases we have made have actually worked out really well, Iwobi, Bassey, Castagna, absolutely fantastic, Traore, really good, and then prior to that, you know, look at Pereira, and people do get on his case a lot, but he's done really well for us. If Muniz is the boy we think he's going to be, I mean, that is gold. Having said all of that, if we have aspirations for Europe, we're not going to do it with these guys alone. We, you know, a couple of injuries with a very busy schedule will see us in really big trouble. We will start looking like West Ham, who
or Brighton.
just didn't seem to belong. They don't belong playing in Europe, not because their high functioning squad can't cope, but they're just not, just don't have a strong enough backbone, and they're too fragile. So, you know, we talk about Mitro 50, Polinia 50, maybe 80, 100. My only aspiration is that the Khans are going to get a yacht upgrade of 130 million. You know, I haven't seen it. I have no confidence that that's actually going to be reinvested. As I said before, my dream is to make Europe, and the Khans go, excellent, that's a great point to sell the club, hand it over to someone. It's got the money to back Marco for what he actually needs. That's my wish.
Possibly. I mean, it's all fair comments. I do agree, though, with Skibby, your point saying you have to say the recruitment has been good. And I'm just looking back through previous seasons, and I mean, these guys are the recent milestones, but the other players who've played the record number of games for Fulham who are currently at the club, Anthony Robinson, Harrison Reed, both bought in. Anthony Robinson signed for $2 million. He's played almost 200 games for Fulham now. Harrison Reed is about 150 to 200 games for Fulham. Kenny Tete was bought in that same season as well. Obviously, not playing as much this season, but still a great player. Tosin bought in that season too. There's been some really good transfers the last few years, and we're starting to see that now. Bernd Leno as well. I mean, it's not been the most exciting transfers in that season that Wilson signed the same year as Muniz signed back in 2021. And like I said, they're not super exciting transfers, but they are transfers that have made a sort of lasting impact on the team, because you look at them and say, these guys are the core of our starting 11 now. The season after Wilson signed, we obviously got back in the Premier League and signed Polinia, Pereira, Bernd Leno, Issa Diop, Willian, Sasa Lukic that season as well. Like, they are that's our core across the players that I've mentioned that we've signed in the last sort of 3 to 4 years. And the benefit there is the fact that, like you said, those guys have played together for an extended period of time now, and we're starting to see the benefit of that. They just know each other so well, because we don't actually have a huge number of players leaving every season. I mean, obviously we had Mitro leave, but really we've lost, kind of just feels like we've almost just lost deadwood over the last few years. When you look at clearing,
cover your ears.
I love Niskins, and I would have loved to see him stay, but can we argue that he wasn't sort of deadwood for this season? Would he be getting anywhere near the squad at the moment? Really?
He had a little patch there. He had a little patch where he actually, I never thought he could do it at Premier League level. He got a very, very bad injury, but before he got that injury, he looked exciting. Look, good luck to the guy, and he's probably absolutely, you know, gone and made plenty of money for his retirement pension fund. Mm-hmm. So good luck to him. Couldn't be happier for the guy. Forget not, if in terms of recruitment, the effect that Willian has had as well on this squad. Absolutely incredible. Obviously, it's a little time bomb. We don't know when that one's going to, well, not a time bomb, but a bubble. We don't know when it's going to burst. But as long as he's still interested in turning up at Motspur Park for training, I'm keeping him. I'm absolutely keeping him.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned about the deadwood, though. It's, for me, Seri was the one I would have loved to have stayed as a backup centre mid. Would we potentially have the core centre mids that we have today? Probably not. But for me, off the back of that Championship season where we fell in love with him, I thought he was going to be...
Good player.
An absolute star. I was surprised.
He was still amazing. He still got it.
But imagine if Marco could have actually got to him and fired him up. He's a very, very great player. But our previous man really couldn't get much out of him.
No.
Yeah. I also think to myself, you know, we lost Anguissa back in 2022 as well. And what a player he's turned out to be at Napoli. And him and Seri,
he was amazing for us.
I mean, he was great for us. He was too good for us that season. That's the main thing.
He really was.
He's just kicked on and gone another level as well since joining Napoli. But at the same time, if we kept Anguissa, we don't get Polina. If we kept Seri, we probably don't see Kearney doing the things that he's doing at the moment as well. Or we maybe don't sign Pereira because we don't really need two players playing roughly in a sort of similar position. So not deadwood because they're class players, but the fact is we've passed on a lot of players. I mean, looking at the last couple of seasons, we've released or sold like 40-odd players. A lot of youth in there, but getting rid of Knockhart and Cavallero and Onoma and all these guys, just pushing them out the door effectively. Michael Hector, Alfie Morse, and all the random keepers we've had over the last few years. Chalobah, there's a lot of players who we've bought in over the years, and we seem to have kind of cleared the squad completely, and there's not much deadwood there now. I hate using the term deadwood because it's kind of offensive for who are a lot of people who are class players and still far better at football than I will ever be. But if you look at our current squad, there's no one really outside of that sort of 25-man squad who you say they're nowhere near good enough to be in this Fulham team. Maybe someone like Vinicius, I think, is not the right fit for us, but it's not like he's a terrible player or anything. But we now have a basis to build on. And look, we're talking about it a bit now. In the international break, I'm hoping we can actually do a podcast and go into a bit more depth about what we feel we need to do in the summer and kind of look at players who we think should probably be moved on and players who we hope can be bought in as well and go into a bit more depth. But I just wanted to sort of start the initial conversations around it based on the fact that these three guys have reached these milestones in the last couple of weeks. Guys, I think we can probably wrap it up there. It's been a good solid hour and a great way to get you started on the podcast, Skibby. It's been really enjoyable having you in and hearing a different absolute perspective pleasure. That's not a family member for once. So we honestly really appreciate you joining us and looking forward to doing it more often with you over the rest of the season and coming seasons to come as well.
No worries. No, thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And Dad, thanks as always for joining.
Yeah, very, very good. You can see a theme developing here. We've got Dave in the Hammy end. We've got Skibby in the Putney end. We're probably going to have to keep going, aren't we? We need someone in the Johnny Haynes. Maybe Hugh
Can't
Grant.
Can't afford anyone in the Riverside.
I was going to say,
if we've got Hugh Grant in the Johnny Haynes, we'll stay on the theme of Hughes. Probably the only person wealthy enough to be able to get a season ticket in the Riverside is maybe Hugh Grosvenor, seventh. What is he, the seventh Duke of Gloucester or something like that? He's a pretty wealthy bloke. He could probably afford to do that. He's probably a Liverpool fan there.
Even then, he'll be pushing the boat out a bit, I reckon. But no, it's honestly great to grow the team a bit and get some new perspectives in and perspectives. Good name drop there. Please do follow Putney Perspective on Twitter as well if you don't already. Keep supporting Skibby and look forward to having you on podcasts in the future, Skibby.
Absolutely.
So thank you everyone who's followed along on the live stream. Thank you to everyone who continues to listen along to the podcast. Really appreciate the support. And as always, come on you Whites.